Okay, thanks. When you look at the report, at least the built environment part of the report, you'll find, I think, three case study buildings in there. Council House 2, the RAF Richmond base, and Zencorp's 40 Albert Road. All those buildings have got Green Star ratings, which is the rating system that the Green Building Council of Australia has developed. So today I'm going to talk a bit about the Green Building Council briefly, a bit about Green Star, and then I'll touch on RAF Richmond. Obviously we've covered CH2 already. And just a little bit about some micro and macro cost and benefit information around green buildings. We've already heard these sorts of figures, I guess, just reiterating that buildings, though they don't really move much and don't look like they're doing that much, actually have quite a profound impact on our resource flows. They use a lot of our energy, they produce a lot of our greenhouse gases and produce a lot of our waste streams. They also use, this is a figure I got from the report, around about 50% of non-agricultural water in the commercial sector alone. So I think that's an interesting statistic. Green Building Council itself was launched coming up to 5 years ago in Australia, based on a model originally developed in the States and launched in about 1993. There's now about 10 Green Building Councils around the world. There is a World Green Building Council, which is the umbrella group that allows us to communicate with each other, and there's about another 16, I think, countries who are looking to establish Green Building Councils in the near future. So it's certainly a growing area. We're not for profit, and we certainly represent the views of industry, but I think we see ourselves as being located in an independent space somewhere between government and industry. And we've, in Australia now, just hit our 400th member mark a week or so ago, which for us has represented some pretty phenomenal growth over the last 12 months or so. Our mission is to transition the property industry to more sustainable forms of practice, primarily looking at voluntary means. We tend to work at the leadership end of the spectrum with Green Star and so on, and we also get involved in advocacy activity with government to help to bring the rest of the industry along, reduce barriers. Green Star is probably the most well-recognised activity and product of the Green Building Council to date. It was launched around about 4 years ago. It's a rating system for buildings, which I'll talk a little bit more about. I guess this quote from one of our directors really, I think, sums it up in terms of where Green Star's positioned. It's a tricky space to have a tool that actually is one that the market finds easy to use and convenient, but also still ensures a level of rigour and transparency, and I think we've been pretty successful over the last 4 years in creating a tool that walks that tightrope. We've now got, as I'll touch on in a minute, quite a number of projects registered for Green Star certification. So diagrammatically, this is really where we see Green Star sitting, at that leadership end of the market, the top 25% of the market. So Green Star in itself is a tool that will over time ratchet up as best practice evolves. We'll also evolve the tools to continually reflect best practice and help to drive that down into that very large area of the bell curve, which sits between the area that the building code regulates, the minimum performance of buildings that we can legally expect in our built environment, and that leadership end of the spectrum. There's a range of Green Star tools in the marketplace now. We started, as I said, about 4 years ago with a tool focused on office buildings. That's office design. Rates the design of an office building at that point in the development process. We followed it up with a tool, the as-built tool, which looks at the delivery of what you said you were going to do in the design phase as a finished built and commissioned product. We also have a tool on that looks at the interiors of the offices, office interiors. We've also now broadened across the commercial sector, or broadening across the commercial sector, and have released tools for the health sector, the education sector. We're working on a tool for the industrial sector. We have a shopping centre tool in a pilot form, and we're also working on a multi-unit residential tool. So hopefully soon we'll have the tools in place that will allow us to go down to, say, Docklands and rate a building that will have a retail component, a residential component, an office component as one overall building. Green Star, as I said, rates the building's attributes, the physical aspects of the building. It's a voluntary system, and it does focus on the buildings as such and promotes a holistic or team-based approach to the design process. And the reason we focused on design initially, I guess, is that really the decisions that are made in that early phase of the building's life cycle, the design phase, actually have a pretty profound impact on the life cycle costs and the life cycle impacts of that asset throughout what could be a 50 or 100 year lifespan. It's a scorecard approach, and there are 8 categories you can see there, hopefully, energy, transport, water, indoor environmental quality, emissions, materials, land use and management, as well as an innovation category that recognises things that we don't currently have in GreenStar. As I said, we do periodically upgrade the tool, but there's always projects that are kind of getting ahead of where we're up to in terms of our credits, and so that's an opportunity for that to be recognised. Essentially, you go through a scoring process. You can do that as a self-assessment, but to get an actual certified rating, it requires you to register your project with us. We have an independent group of assessors who then assess that submission and through a fairly robust process come up with a rating score, which then means you hopefully get a rating of 4, 5 or 6 green stars. About a year ago, this was kind of the landscape across Australia, about 55 projects registered with us to achieve Green Star, and we'd certified about 16. Now, a year later, 360-plus projects registered with us, and that figure's growing fairly rapidly. We've got now 30-plus projects certified, and those certified projects are coming out at a much greater rate as well. And also, we're getting a little more. Obviously, there's a fairly high concentration around the eastern seaboard, around Adelaide, but we are getting increasing numbers of projects in Queensland, WA as well. I'll quickly touch on RAF Richmond. I'm not going to talk about this in a lot of detail. It's certainly a project that's got a Green Star rating, but I haven't been directly involved in it. But you'll find a lot more information in the report if you want to dig into that, and also on the Green Building Council website there's a fairly detailed case study of the features that allowed it to get the Green Star rating. We sometimes refer to this building as our 15-star building. The reason for that is because they've actually gone through the office design process, then went out and got the as-built process, as I said, to show that they've built what they said they were going to build. And then they've also rated the interior of that project as well. And all of those have achieved a 5-star rating. Just looking at the as-built rating, what that chart shows you is the kind of potential scores in each of our categories and the actual scores. And you'll note that in the water and also the management category of Green Star, this project scored 100% of all the possible points available to it. So from a defence point of view, they're the largest single asset holder in the government with a $15 billion portfolio. So water efficiency has been identified by defence as a key issue, and particularly for this project. As I said, they implemented a number of initiatives which saw it score 100% in the water category, and that creates a benchmark of around about 50% compared to comparable defence facilities. As we saw from Shane, CH2 is targeting around about 72%, and that's typically where we see the projects that are going for, significant points under the water category of Green Star, normally achieving that sort of 50 to 70% savings of potable water consumption. The actual features that were implemented in this building, again, on-site sewage treatment, I don't think it's the same level that CH2's pursued with their black water recycling. In fact, I think it was an older sewage treatment facility that was recommissioned for the purpose of this building. They also installed a fairly large rainwater tank, which is used for the toilet flushing and so on. The use of air-cooled chillers rather than water-cooled chillers, which have certainly water use benefits and reduced Legionella risk benefits. I mean, obviously, there's an energy and greenhouse equation that you've got to weigh up in looking at that, but they've reduced their water consumption through using those, and they've obviously put in high-efficiency fixtures and fittings. They've also submetered and put in leak detection systems, which are linked back to the building management system, which I think CH2's got all that stuff as well, hasn't it, Shane? So that's sort of becoming fairly conventional now. But as we heard before from Anne, you know, there are plenty of leaks out there in the water system, and up until recently, I don't think it's been common practice for this to occur. But it should, in the same way as you submeter electricity uses and so on, you should be submetering water. And from a landscaping point of view, they've used drought tolerant landscaping. I'm just going to quickly touch. Segue into some costs and benefits and I guess climate change information. This is a diagram which was produced out of the States, which really shows that it's sort of cost per square foot and a number of the LEED rating levels that they use in the American system. What it showed was that they were distributed throughout the kind of cost curve of a building. So therefore, the cost of a building and its green rating level doesn't necessarily correlate. The higher you're going green doesn't mean the more expensive your building is. From a recent IPCC report that was released a couple of months ago, I think this is a really telling document or telling bit of data for the built environment, which is the third from the left. It's looking at the abatement potential and three different levels of dollars per tonne of carbon, $20, $50 and $100. And I mean, even if you take a fairly low level, which is what we've seen so far in the markets, the built environment really, in terms of abatement potential, is pretty much equivalent to the industrial sector, transport and energy supply sector put together. Now, this is an international report, but we've actually been doing some research with some of our colleagues that we're in with the Australian Sustainable Built Environment Council, and we're coming up with some pretty similar kind of outcomes for the Australian situation. So going forward, the built environment is going to be a real opportunity in this area.